We know that Blas Theory, your background is from theater, and we know that Blas Theory is not a conventional theater. You had to kidnap your audience in the 90s. Would you like to share some ideas about that?
Well, as you say, my background is in theater, and by the time I was at university, I was very struck by how theater was a very conservative art form in many ways. Even the architecture of theatre is 200 or 300 years old, maybe even 2,000 years old, depending how far back you go. And we are also living through a period where culture takes place and who engages in culture, how we receive culture is going through major change. And that's partly a function of a whole set of technological changes, communication changes. And so once we were started working together as Blas Theory, we became very interested in what the potential of theatre might be if you go back to the very first principles of theatre, which is that it's a particular moment in time at a particular place with a relationship between a performer and a member of the audience. If you have those three things, four things, you have theatre. So, you know, and of course this is, other people have asked these same questions many times in the past, and Peter Brook's book, The Empty Space, talks about his own journey in the 1960s to look at these kinds of questions. We've really taken those questions and thought about them in terms of a technological society, and a society where culture is increasingly a two-way process. The days in which people created culture and gave it up to others to consume are being challenged and are changing dramatically. So we've become very interested in looking at how the audience and the performer might interact, how they may even swap roles, or how the performer themselves might be absent and leave the stage altogether and leave audience member talking with audience member. You know, the history of 20th century theatre is very much one about challenges to the structure of the relationship between the audience and the performer. You know, we can think of experiments in the Soviet Union in the 1920s, or of Erwin Piscator and Bertolt Brecht in Germany in the late 20s and 30s about thinking about the relationship between the audience and the performer. I beg your pardon?
Brecht.
Bertolt Brecht. Then in the 1960s, another whole wave of experimental theatre, especially in the US and also in the UK and mainland Europe, looking at the relationship between audience and performer. Through the early 1990s, we looked for strategies for how we might make the audience-performer relationship different and more interesting and more fluid. But we often found ourselves taking strategies that were themselves avant-garde, self-consciously avant-garde, or strange, complex structures. And once we started looking at the language of games, we realized that here was a cultural form that is very pure in its interaction. It's a very easy, seductive form of interaction. A two-year-old or three-year-old child knows how to play a game. And so we suddenly realized that this was a much more rich development for us. And so since 1999, when we made a work called Desert Rain, we have made works that are either our games or are weaving in and out of a game language, using the codes and behaviors of games as a way of creating more more subtle and fluid forms of interaction between ourselves and the audience.
There is a principal interactive mode with your audience. like a regular input then output by using mobile technology. And that is very different from another work in this exhibition. Why?
There's a couple of answers to that. One is to say that there is still a tremendous amount of output, as you put it, in Day of the Figurines from us as artists. So we've written many, many thousands of words of structure and of narrative. So the work is not an empty shell, you know. So it is still something where you can. Some players have never interacted at all and played the whole game for 24 days, just receiving and enjoyed it on those terms. So you can do that. But of course, you are right to say that compared to a lot of works, Day of the Figurines invites a significant contribution from the public, and that is because we hope that providing a stage for the public to create their own character and their own tone of voice is something very pleasurable. We do it because we think that audiences are interested. We are all more interested in cultural forms that are participatory. And this is, you know, what we see on the internet in the last 5 years is a huge rise in people making their own culture and engaging very directly in discussion about culture. So, you know, even if you just take one tiny example of newspaper columnists who once would write 1,000 words once a week about a subject, and a few letters would come and maybe one or two would be published in the newspaper. Now those columns are online and hundreds or even thousands of people will comment and blog their responses to it. So you have a huge change in the way in which we talk to one another. So this to us has become very, very interesting because it feels like there's a real opportunity there to rethink the shape of culture. That's not to say that we want to necessarily demand of our audience that you must do the work. More a question of saying here is a platform and a stage that you might want to occupy in your own way. And it's a very deliberate decision that we use SMS, which is of course very short and very, very tiny.
Does Blood Theory get up the playwright, the whore, and the professional actor, those basic material of theatre, or you transform them?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's important to say that in Blood Theory we are three artists, and Jew Rofar and Nick Tandavanich, who I work with, neither come from a theatre background. So they come more from a visual arts background. So we have different perspectives on this question. But yes, we've tried to rethink all of those relationships at the core of theatre making. But I still think there is a tremendous amount of theatrical practice in how we work. We devise works collaboratively. Often there is some kind of stage, even if that stage might be, in the case of Day of the Figurines, a board game. In works like Can You See Me Now or Uncle Royal Around You, the stage is the streets of the city. To me, they're still performance spaces and can be thought of in those ways. What we've tried to do is rethink who might be a performer. And on what terms, you know, it is there is a long history in radical theatre of thinking about could an audience member walk onto the stage and be one of the performers. Well, for us, we're looking at that kind of question, but saying, well, once you step outside of the architecture of theatrical space, and the theatre could be a street or it could be a network, then this is a much more interesting question, much more fluid, because how you move on and off stage is harder to determine, and that's a very productive thing. In Day of the Figurines, you choose a figurine, you give them a name, and you give them some characteristics. So you create a fictional identity. But you play on your own mobile phone, which sits in your pocket, and you play for up to 24 days. So this fictional person is inside your personal device. And so what we find is that over the course of a game of Day of the Figurines, there is a slippage between your fiction and yourself. And at one time it feels very fictional, and at other times you're really answering as yourself. So that there's a kind of fluid relationship there, and that to me is very interesting, that we take on lots of identities, lots of shells in these electronic spaces, but they kind of drop again and or reform, or we change to a new one, so that it's a very malleable, very amorphous space.
We now let Blast Theory cooperate with the mixed reality label of the University of Nottingham. How do you work together and negotiate with each other?
You're absolutely right. Of course, there are different goals. But the root of collaboration is always about understanding those differing goals and negotiating around them. So any theatre, any piece of theatre is about these same sets of negotiations between a group of actors and a director in a conventional sense, or a collective who devise theatre. Of course, negotiation is always taking place, and an understanding of differing goals is important. And to me, the collaboration we have with the University of Nottingham is not so different. Of course, it's at a dramatically sort of expanded scale, because the University of Nottingham are, as you say, computer scientists who specialize in research in issues like ubiquitous computing or human-computer interaction. And our goals are bound up with a whole set of cultural questions which are less relevant to the mixed reality lab. But because we have now worked together for 11 years, yes, we have really come to understand each other very well and to find common ground in interesting ways. And what's fascinating about the collaboration is that even though we might seem to be at extremely different positions, the common ground and the capacity of one team to surprise the other team is always very strong. You know, that there's always surprising connections, surprising questions come up, and that's very much about a question of trust and about of kind of human understanding of personal relationships. You know, the foundation is very much about respect and liking one another. You know, we actually have good friendships, and so that then provides a really strong platform for discussion and for finding areas of common interest.
Does people react differently in this project in other cities?
Well, it varies very much. And one of the things that's so interesting is that even though SMS is a kind of global technology, it is used in very different ways in different places. So in Germany, text messaging does not have a strong tradition and is still quite expensive. In Singapore, it's one of the cheapest countries in the world for sending SMS, and there is a very strong, vibrant culture of text messaging. People use it freely and continuously. And similarly, there's also very different cultures in terms of gaming. You know, in Germany, gaming is still something very in a very particular place, for example, and in Singapore, games are very common, and online internet culture is very vibrant there. So the games then therefore change quite considerably according to those different cultural traditions. We certainly are very interested in observing those differences and studying them. And the University of Nottingham often make ethnographic studies of the work that they do with us, which looks at what do people do in this world, how do people behave, you know, what are the key things governing their behavior. A game like Day of the Figurines is an incredibly subjective experience. In the town, there are 50 locations. You can only ever be at one at one time, and by definition you are missing what happens in the other 49 places. So you have a very narrow slice through the world, and it's very much determined by your own experiences. So some people get killed, you know, after only a few days. Their game is incredibly short. They, you know, it went horribly wrong and they got killed, you know. So other people are very solitary and spend their time off on the margins, just gently exploring little things alone. Other people are super social and constantly follow wherever the busiest places are, and they chat. So the game, even the same game, has these incredible multiplicity of tracks, and we've tried at times to model them, how people kind of intersect with one another and overlap and then go and look for someone they talked to 3 days ago and so on. So for me, playing it every time, there are still places I've never been to and still moments in time that I've never experienced. So to me, I experience it on a very subjective level, which is now's another opportunity to engage in another whole group of people and see where it takes.
And how are the 50 spots selected?
So they were all created by us as artists right at the outset. So we created 50 locations, and then we wrote a history for every 5 minutes for the whole 24 hours of the game, the game world. So
What is the favorite subject that Blood Theory want to engage in theater situation in urban space?
So at times we've made work that is very directly concerned with political issues, and the Kidnap Project was very much around the Spanner trial, a very famous trial in the UK around sort of freedom of behavior. At the moment, over the last few years, we have really been looking at the question of in these electronic spaces, who is invited to speak, and what can meaningfully be said. So, which I think is a very, very important question. Most electronic spaces are moderated. And moderation means someone sits behind a wizard, but sits behind the curtain, deciding what is and is not valid speech. And they decide whether the language is appropriate, whether it's inappropriate, and they are censoring continuously what can be said. And they invite tremendous freedom of speech. They present themselves as big open worlds, but in fact they are not open worlds at all. They are deliberately policed in some way. At this very moment in time, I have been doing a lot of research into the history of the British Army in Northern Ireland, and I hope that this might lead to a work at some stage, because it's a very particular moment in British history, and still has many unanswered questions about it. So I have been doing a lot of reading into Northern Ireland in the late 1970s and early 1980s. But it's always part of our work that those sorts of questions may not necessarily show themselves in a piece of work at the most front level. We may not make a piece of work that is about Northern Ireland, but that those questions nevertheless inform it and sit behind it. So Day of the Figurines is a piece in which it's set in a small English town, a slightly run down derelict English town, and halfway through the game an army arrives into the town, and the troops speak Arabic. So it's clearly a kind of reflection on Britain's role in invading Arabic countries, but it's not a work about the war. It doesn't take a particular position on it. It just draws attention to the fact that those in Britain, we are for this year and last year, the year before that, we have been occupying an Arab-speaking country, and so it's more a question of just asserting that these are conditions that lie behind our everyday lives. So we have these multiple strands, and then of course other things happen depending on how people play, so that itself changes.